On this week's Big Tech Show, when you travel, how do you avoid getting completely ripped off on roaming charges outside of Europe? And what are some of the travel hacks you should know about that aren't included in the tech you buy? We give you all the tips you need to know.
On top of my list, Adrian, is my noise-cancelling headphones. When I put them on, I love that it just goes boom, and you're in this kind of sonic bubble and you can't hear the baby and you can't hear that weird frequency of the aircon on the airplane.
The Big Tech Show, available on all podcast platforms.
On the latest episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry, I'm delighted to be joined by cardiologist Dr. Paddy Barrett, chatting all things cardiovascular disease.
The way I look at this is that the two statistics that everyone should really be aware of is cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death globally and in most developed nations, but it's also the most preventable. 90% of it can be prevented at an early stage if you just follow the right steps and formula. So I look at it as a scary opportunity.
As ever, available on all podcast platforms.
Hello and welcome to The Throw-In with me, Sinead Cassan. Well, the leagues came to an end in women's Gaelic football and camogie over the weekend. The titles just keep coming for me. The All-Ireland champions won the Lidl One Division One title for the first time in their history. They beat Donegal by 2 points, 2-8 to 1-9 at Croke Park. We'll have Cork legend Rena Buckley and the Irish Independents Donegal Boyle on to talk about that. And Galway retained their Camogie Division 1 title. They beat Cork by 4 points in the final on Saturday night. Four-time All-Ireland Camogie winner Ursula Jacob will be on to assess that. Will we start with football? Donegal Boyle and Rena Buckley are here. Rena, there's just no stopping the Meath machine at the moment, is there?
Absolutely, yeah. I suppose, look, it was before the game, I wasn't sure which way the game would go, but I think Meath are growing. You know, it's only last year they're in the Division 2 final. You know, they're in a 2 years ago they're in an intermediate final, and they seem to be growing and growing and improving and improving. And I just thought they put in a really impressive display again yesterday. And I think they'll be, you know, I think they've probably made themselves favourites for the All Ireland Championship for this year. You know, I thought they played very well. I thought they had a great system of play, and they have the attacking players to score as well. So look, they're an excellent side, and I thought they were worth their win yesterday.
Absolutely, Donegal. The talk from the Meath players in the build-up to this game was that they felt they had a point to prove because they wanted to show that their All-Ireland win over Dublin last September wasn't a one-off. I think any iota of doubt about that now is completely wiped.
Yeah, and that's something they've repeated nearly since after the All-Ireland final last year, that you get a sense often that maybe the feel that some people think they just caught people off guard and maybe, you know, sucker-punched Cork in the semi-final with that late couple of goals and maybe did the same to Dublin, who weren't fully tuned in. And like, whether that's real or imagined, I don't know, but it's definitely their fuel at the minute. They have, yesterday they were, you know, early on they were very much in command. I think it was 1-6 to 2 points after about 23 minutes. Donegal hadn't scored from play at that stage. Now, there was a fair win in Croker, but and even when it did go against them for that period when they were down to 14, they found a way to dig it out. Not that great breakaway goal from Niamh O'Sullivan, which was a brilliant move. Like, they're counter-attacking football. Like, you know, you see there's 15 behind the ball and sometimes it's not that pretty. But the way they counter-attack and the speed to do it at and the smartness to do it with as well is really top-level stuff. Like, that, at a couple of the goals that worked, the two goals that worked, the first one was a long kick out from Monica McGurk. Emma Duggan, Vicky Wall goal, Vicky Wall pass, I think it was Kelsey Nesbitt goal, and the second goal was really well worked. Just right decisions at the right time, done at pace, and it's very, very hard to defend against. So, as Rena said, they're in a great position going into the final, and, like, you know, that refrain has been repeated, that flash in the pan, want to double down and show everyone how good we were, and if that's what's driving them so far, it's certainly working for them.
No, absolutely. And Donegal really tested Meath here, Rena. I mean, as Donica said, Meath led by 7 points, 1-6 to 2 points, with 4 minutes of the first half left. And then 5 minutes into the second half, they were down by a point. It was some comeback by Donegal, but Meath showed their nerve here, didn't they, to get back in front again and hold on to that lead.
Absolutely, yeah. I suppose Donegal, Meath settled into the game much quicker than Donegal. Donegal took a while to settle into the game. And then I suppose it was really when they created that goal opportunity. It was Karen Guttery got a chance in front of goal, and she was taken down by Mary Kate Lynch. Mary Kate Lynch got a yellow card, and that's really when Donegal came into the game. I think it was during that yellow card. I think Donegal might have scored 1-4 in that 10-minute period. That was really what got them back into the game, and they really pushed Meath at that point. But I suppose once Meath came back to 15, once they got back into their stride again, I think they kind of got stronger and stronger as the second half was going on, and they finished really well. With a few minutes to go, there was only 2 points between the team, 1 point between the teams, and I think they ended up winning. It was by 2 points in the end, but they finished quite strongly, I felt. And I think their level of athleticism has actually improved since last year, and I think that's a great testament to Meath, because sometimes after winning an All-Ireland, it's easy to sit back a little bit, but they seem to have pushed on, and they seem to be getting better. Donegal pushed them for sure. Donegal have got some excellent players on their side, but I think Meath were just that little bit better.
Yeah, a guy who has to take huge credit here, Dunica, is obviously the manager. And I saw in your report this morning that after the win yesterday, he was asked about what the turning point was, or when did he feel things started to change for Meath football?
Yeah, I asked him that one because I covered the Cork game last year, the All-Ireland semi-final. And, that was sort of, 3 minutes ago or whatever it was, Meath were losing, but they were losing with great respect and dignity. They'd gone down swinging. They had brought Cork, who were obviously being Cork and Dublin, had sort of carved up ladies football for the last while between them, and Meath had put in a really good showing, and then they sort of pulled that game out of the bag. It was a remarkable game to cover, and I was asking him, was that the moment? And he went back to this game in against Cavan a few years ago, and he just said they got bullied. He says one of the girls needed stitches after the game. I said we hit the gym after that and we trained twice as hard as they ever did. So that was, for him, that was the turning point. And it's amazing, they were Division 3 in 2019 and so you had two COVID years there, so the amount of work you could actually do would have been pretty limited. And now they're, just hoovering up titles, Division 2, Intermediate, All-Ireland Senior, and now the First Division 1 title. And it's one of the most remarkable stories in Irish sport. And even, living in or being from Meath, and you can see the impact it's had. When they played Dublin in that game a few weeks ago, which was effectively a dead rubber, that was thousands at it. I can't remember exactly, maybe 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, something like that. It was a huge turnout. For a game that people are into. And just as an aside, my own club, we were doing a presentation recently, and we got one of the girls, our reserve team, our men's team won a reserve championship, and we got one of the girls down from the Meath All-Ireland winning team to present the medal to us. She'd be from our local ladies club, if you like, Orla Duff's her name, and she came down and presented the medal. So people are buying into this on every level. They're going to games, which is always a challenge. You know what I mean? It's we can talk about it a lot. It's always a challenge to get people to part with their money or give up their time and go to games, and it happens sometimes, but it doesn't happen all the time. But now on this, you have people going to Navan, and they're just like me, people will buy into beating Dublin in Ireland final every day of the week, no matter what it is. So, once they did that, they were straight in terms of the battle for hearts and minds was won in that moment. So no, they really are. They have outrageous momentum behind them, and sort of really likeable and really honest team as well, because they're we talk about Emma Duggan, we talk about Vicky Wall, and they're stars, and they're some brilliant footballers, some great kicking in very windy conditions yesterday. But they all work, job number one, they all work, they all cover ground, they all get all the way back, and then when they turn over the ball, they attack in waves as well, back up the other way. So there's great sort of humility to them, and I think, from a Meath point of view, I think people really bought into them.
Yeah, from a Meath point of view, of course, but not for people down in Cork where Rena is from. They really are bringing the game to a new level, Rena. Do you feel that?
Yeah, I do. And definitely, Donica, they remarked on their ability. They bring a lot of people behind the ball, and then they counter-attack very quickly. And, Donegal would have been reliant on the counter-attack as well, but Meath were just that bit quicker on their counter-attack. And then the other thing about Meath that I thought was very noticeable yesterday was I thought their physicality was excellent. They were quite strong on the ball, and off the ball. They tackled quite hard. They gave away a couple of frees and things like that. But certainly, from a physical point of view, they can move and they're strong, and they're an excellent side. I suppose last year when I was looking at them, they kind of reminded me a little bit of my own Cork team that I was part of.
Of course they did.
They did. The way they came from, I suppose from humble beginnings. Donegal went there where they were in 2019, and they made such progress so quickly, to winning an All-Ireland. And it was something similar to what happened with us in Cork back in 2004, 2005. We went from winning, I think we won a Division 2 in 2004, We won a Division 2 in 2003 and we ended up winning the All-Ireland at senior level in 2005. So Meath actually were even quicker than that. They're a fairy tale story at the moment. They're looking very good going into Championship. So they will be favourites. But Donegal will be happy enough with their run out yesterday. They certainly will be in the mix. They've got some excellent players. I mean, Jolene McLaughlin is one of the best players in the country for sure. And she showed that again yesterday. She was hard to keep an eye on. And with Karen Guthrie and Yvonne Bonner up front as well, they can be hard to handle. So, look, I'm sure Maxi Corn will be delighted that they got a run out in Croke Park. They got the National League final and they'll be in good position now going to the Championship as well.
It'll be interesting to see how teams set up for Meath now, because like, it's very deliberate what they're doing. Like, it's quite, you know, everyone knows what they're doing. But stopping it now is the next thing.
In time,
teams will figure it out, no doubt. And you know, the game will evolve again on the back of it, because that won't work anymore. And maybe teams won't commit as much ball forward, or maybe you've seen with the Dublin men's team, like they were more careful in possession then after a while, they stopped being so gung-ho. So it'll be very interesting to see what coaches do now to combat this counter-attacking style of football, which is happening at the minute. And at what stage will they figure out the best way to play against it? Like Donegal got very close yesterday, and as Rena said there, like, looking at the full forward line, I have 4 and 3 is 7, 9 points from the full forward line. And maybe a little bit of luck with a little flick on that ball that went in late at the end. Monarch McGurk made a great save when there was a point in the game. Like, there wasn't that much in it. Like, we're talking about Meath because Meath are still winning, but Donegal were really close. So it's fairly democratic at the minute, it seems, the ladies' football landscape. From only 2 years ago, where we were talking about Dublin and Cork, and is there anyone to get near them? And all of a sudden, you know, Meath are champions. Dublin and Cork are obviously still there. You'll have Donegal will have taken a lot of heart from that as well. So you're going into a much more open championship now, it feels like.
Yeah, definitely. Rena, you mentioned there earlier about the kind of the physicality. And of course, you know, we saw the impact again of Vicky Wall. And I just love the way she even tucks her jersey into her shorts. It's her kind of signature style now at this stage. But I saw her tweet after the game. It was a picture of herself and Eamon Murray. And she captioned it, "Still friends." Now, we're assuming this is after his comments last week when he said he expects Vicky to move to the AFLW later this year. And he kind of gave out about the game and said it's dreadful to watch. But look, you can't argue against anyone deciding to have the experience of living like a pro in Australia. But what a loss to the game she would be, Rena, if she does decide to move to Australia.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. So she did an interview with TG Cahir after the game. And on that interview, she said she has nothing signed. So I suppose it's not a done deal that she's going to go to Australia. So I think that was what the reference was to in her tweet. But look, Vicky's an excellent player. She showed yesterday her ability to break the tackle, and likewise in the All-Ireland final last year, her ability to break the tackle in ladies football is phenomenal. So obviously she'd be very she'd be worth her weight in gold in Australia as well. So like, I suppose particularly the way teams set up now, if you have the ability to break the tackle like that, it's a massive advantage to have. So look, she's a superb player. You know, she's a great ambassador for the game. And look, I would hope from a selfish point of view that she does stay playing football, because I suppose she's excellent. In terms of her skill level, she's excellent. In terms of just that breaking of the tackle, she's outstanding. And her reading of the game, she always takes the ball on at the right time, and she's that out ball for Meath. If they're under the cosh any bit at all, she can break the tackle and take the pressure off the back line. So look, we'd love to have her, but I suppose the world is her oyster at the moment. Just to pick up on one point that Dunica made there in terms of how to counteract Meath's play. So it was something I was expecting a little bit more from Donegal, was that long ball, the long ball in, particularly when you have Karen Guthrie and Yvonne Bonner inside. But it was something they didn't use until the last quarter, until after the second water break. And it was something that was successful for them against Dublin in the semi-final. So look, I was a bit surprised they didn't use the direct ball a little bit more. And I think that's one way, I suppose, that, you know, me do counter-attack in droves as well as defend in droves. So I think kicking the ball against them would be probably a good tactic to have against them, and I think that would be probably one of the most effective ways to get on top of them. So it'll be interesting going forward if anyone kind of goes with that a little bit more.
Yeah, the AFLW, Sinead, just on that, like, they're on about changing the season, and the season has been, or there's more franchises involved next year. I think every AFL club will have an AFLW wing next year for the next season, but they're on about changing to August and September, and I think a start. And then, and I think every ladies football manager in the country will be looking at that, because if it does go to that time, you know, how much or how little will they miss, or whatever the new season looks like, could have an impact on how much they're available to them. But the other thing was, and Murray picked up on this, is like sometimes they come back and they're after putting in some very hard weeks, playing a very attritional sport, living the professional life. But like that comes with, that takes its toll as well, because I suppose you're playing at a level against other people who are living the same professional life. And, you know, you saw Sinead Goldrick got that really bad hamstring injury last year. You know, so I'd imagine that all the managers are saying like, no one would begrudge anyone going, but when they're going, maybe you're watching through your fingers a little bit, because you know, you don't know what you're going to get back. Even if they're going to come back exhausted or injured or anything. So it's what they do with that season and when they start it. And it will be very interesting, because all the Irish players out there seem to be making an impact. You know what I mean? Like Cora Staunton still doing it. Breach Dack had a good year by all accounts. Meade won again, or Ireland won again, sorry, in the grand final there. So like, I'd imagine the Aussies will keep fishing these waters, and we'll lose a lot more of our sort of higher profile players.
Okay, and just very quickly, Kerry won the Division 2 final. They came into this game as the underdogs with Armagh, the favourites, but Kerry beat them by 3 points, 112 to 12 points. Daniel O'Leary came on and made a huge impact, scoring 1-2. So a win and promotion for Kerry there. Rena, before you go, we've got Ursula on next now to talk about the Camogie final. From your perspective, another defeat for Cork to Galway. How do you assess where Cork are at?
Yeah, I suppose Luke Cork started very brightly. They got into the game very quickly and they did very, very well. It was a kind of an unusual game in terms of the most of their scorers were actually in the back line. You know, they played with a very kind of modern style of play where the back line were and the midfields were attacking hugely and actually ended up getting on the score sheet a lot more than the forward line. But Galway got in at half time. They obviously regrouped and they came out in the second half a different animal. And they dominated, I suppose, in the second half, and they got some crucial scores, and I suppose they got their noses ahead of Cork. I think probably, I think Galway are still a little bit ahead of Cork. I think they probably have a bit more balance in their team. Look, I think Cork have an excellent style of play. They know exactly what they're doing, but I just think maybe Galway at the moment, personnel-wise, are probably in a little bit of a stronger position. Even you looked at their bench that came on there, and just going through all their subs, the subs that didn't come on, you know, they've a lot of strength and depth, probably a little bit more than Cork have. And I suppose they use that to full advantage. No, Cork will be relatively happy. There was definitely, you know, they did well in a lot of areas for a long number of the game. But at the end of the day, I think Galway probably have the upper hand on Cork at the moment.
Okay, good stuff, Rena. Thanks for that. Well, Ursula Jacob is here now to talk about the Division 1 Camogie final that took place at Croke Park on Saturday night. So, Ursula, back-to-back league titles for Galway. It was some turnaround from them in their final against Cork. They came from 6 points down early in the second half to win by 4 points, 2-14 to 1-13. Now, you were there on RTE duty for this. We spoke earlier in the podcast about Meath being a machine in Gaelic football. Well, Galway are winning all around them as well in the Camogie, aren't they?
Yeah, and they're having this kind of dominance over Cork in the last couple of years as well. You know, it's their fifth game in a row, either in league or championship, to be beating Cork. So it was a massive win. You were probably thinking when they went 6 points down just after Amy O'Connor's goal, that Galway were looking in a little bit of trouble. They seemed not their usual kind of consistent self, and their forwards weren't getting the balls in. But look, Cahill and his management team made some vital changes, and ultimately the subs that came on made the difference. And, you know, their subs got 2-5 off the bench in the last 20 minutes, and that proved to be the difference.
How demoralising is this for Cork? As you said, it was their fifth consecutive defeat to Galway. That's across league and the championship. How demoralising is it? Do you think they're closing the gap on Galway?
Yeah, like, look, when you look at the results, there's never more than anything than maybe 3-4 points. So I think Cork will be reasonably happy. You know, their first half performance was really impressive. They were dominating a lot of sectors. Defensively, they were very solid. Their half-back line in particular were completely dictating terms. And up front, you know, the usuals, Amy O'Connor, Katrina Mackey, those girls were leading. But one positive for Cork is that they do have a number of girls coming back into the team. You know, Hannah Looney is expected to return in May, I hear, and even Orla Cronin is expected to return. So those two girls in particular are massive boosts to Cork if they can get them back into the team, because Hannah, as we saw last year, completely dominated proceedings at midfield, and Orla Cronin is one of the best forwards in Cork and in Ireland. So I think they'll be reasonably happy. They'll take a lot of positives from it. Obviously, they'll be disappointed to let the 6 points slip, but these girls on the Cork team are quite young. They're still that little bit more inexperienced than Galway. And I think Galway's experience got them through on Saturday night.
Yeah, it's just their time at the moment, Donica, isn't it, Galway?
Yeah, it seems to be, Sinead. Like, I was looking at it. You mentioned their dominance. It's two All-Irelands and three National Leagues now. And the only one they missed out on was it Denise Gall's late penalty in a couple of years ago that stopped them winning the other All-Ireland in that sequence. So, like, you know, it's fair dominance and fair dominance over Cork as well. As Ursula said, that's five on the spin now. And in any sport, I think, and you know, that becomes a bit of an issue, I think, or at least it can if you let it. If you're losing to the same teams all, because part of your mind thinks, like, geez, we're done here even before you go out. So that'll be interesting to see how they can handle that in terms of turning around. But absolutely, Galway are the standard. There's no doubt about that they are top of the tree at the minute.
Yeah, Ursula, like you mentioned earlier, Cork kind of looked set up for this when Amy O'Connor scored that goal at the start of the second half and they led 1-10 to 7 points. But the Galway subs really were the difference, weren't they? They scored 2-5 in the second half. Catherine Finnerty, Sabine Rabbit came on. But Carrie Dolan was superb. She came off the bench, finished at 1-4, 3 from frees. She was the game changer.
She was, without a doubt. And I think, you know, we even mentioned it on Saturday night after the game. Her attitude and everything, her body language when she came on, you know, sometimes when a player is left off, and she's someone who would have regularly started for Galway, she just had such a positivity coming on the pitch. She really showed her true leadership qualities, and right from the get-go she won a free within a minute of her coming on. And you know, obviously her goal was vital for Galway in the end. But that's one thing that it has impressed me most about Galway is the competition for places in the panel. It's not just the reliance on maybe the starting 15. If you look at their bench on Saturday night, they have five or six girls that have started and won All-Irelands, and they were in the bench. So that's one thing that I think Galway have over the other counties. I think they have a really, really strong bench, and Carrie's no doubt going to be pushing for a starting place in the championship.
Yeah, because she mentioned it afterwards in her Player of the Match award, like she was disappointed not to get on that starting team, and you know, she wanted to show it then when she came on.
Yeah, and it's a great example for anyone that's maybe left off, that when you get your chance, you take it. And by God, she did take it on Saturday night. But look, at Carrie's a fantastic player. You know, she's done lots for Galway Camogie, and I've no doubt she'll be pushing hard for her place again come the start of the championship. But look, as I said, it's the one thing that I think Galway do have over other counties. And I think the big challenge for Galway now is to do that back-to-back All-Ireland, because they've won 4 All-Irelands, but they've never done the back-to-back. And that's, I think, the challenge that Cottle is going to be saying to his players now. We're a great team, but to be really, really great and to be considered one of the all-time great teams, you need to be doing the back-to-back.
So are we looking ahead to the championship then? Who can take down Galway?
I still reckon, as long as they don't meet in the semi-final, I'd still be thinking that Galway and Cork are going to be back in the final. I think Tip are really, really pushing hard, even in the league this year again. They seem to really push Galway fully out in a game, and they were very unlucky to lose that game. And obviously Kilkenny are going to be there or thereabouts, but they have lost a few players through injury and through various reasons. So I still would be tipping that Galway and Cork are going to be back in the final. But look, anything can happen, and that's the joys of sports. But I still reckon it's going to be Tip, Kilkenny, Cork, Galway in the semi-finals.
What do you think, Donica?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think they've sort of stood out as the teams that are, you know, most likely. And I think Galway look like a team who are sort of getting a little bit stronger and a little bit more comfortable with the fact that they're, you know, they're now the hunted rather than the hunters, and have been for a couple of seasons, but doesn't seem to bother them. So, you know, Cork, as Ursula said, have a couple to come back, but Galway are still the team to catch.
Ursula, just a quick word too on the Division 2 final, which Wexford won. They beat Antrim 3-12 to 14 points. What stood out to you about this?
Well, I suppose from a Wexford point of view, it was really impressive that they seemed to be so goal hungry in the first half in particular, and it seemed to be part of their game plan to take on Antrim at every opportunity. And to get three goals within, you know, inside the first 15 minutes was so impressive. And it's brilliant for Wexford to be back next year playing Division 1 Camogie, because that's the only way Wexford's going to progress at senior level if they're playing the top teams, you know. So it was a really important victory for Wexford. Obviously, I'd be very disappointed for Antrim that, you know, I felt they looked very flat on Saturday night. They didn't seem their usual, there didn't seem to be the same buzz about him on Saturday evening. I don't know what it was. Maybe nerves got to him, I'm not sure. But the last time I saw him in Croke Park was the Intermediate All-Ireland last year, and they were hopping off the ground. So, look, I'm sure they're going to get things right. And obviously the red card for Chloe Drain had a huge bearing on the match. It pretty much ruined the game then, because they were struggling as it was. And then when Chloe went off, they were under more pressure. But one thing I would say, and a positive for Antrim, they did outscore Wexford in the second half, 8-6. So look, at if you take out maybe the three goals and how they were kind of easily conceded, there is positives there for Antrim. And they will be hoping that Maeve Kelly, who was player of the match in last year's All-Ireland, will be back maybe by championship, because she's a huge loss and she's a massively talented player that Antrim need.
A little earlier before we came on air, Ursula, we were kind of talking about the crowd, or maybe lack thereof, that was at Croke Park on Saturday evening. Should the game still be played at Croke Park, or do these need to go to a smaller venue? And as Dunica was kind of saying, it's about kind of getting that balance right between having the big games at Croke Park, but also not losing any atmosphere either.
Yeah, I would have been very disappointed with the crowds, if I'm being honest, on Saturday evening. You know, for the Wexford Antrim game, if there was a couple of hundred people there, and it was probably pretty much just parents and siblings, I would say. So that was disappointing. Obviously, I know everyone's dream is to play in Croke Park, and it's the best pitch in Ireland, in my opinion. But, you know, maybe it does need to be looked at, that maybe they need to be played alongside another game, whether it's even a men's game, and coordinated in that way. Because I remember playing a few league finals in the past in Thurles, and we played before the men's National Hurling League games. And yeah, like, fair enough, you want people to come in to support you, but the crowds will come in if there's a couple of games on there. And there probably was only a couple of thousand there on Saturday evening. The timing probably wasn't brilliant either, because even both Anne-Marie Hayes and Anna Geary were saying to me, if you're bringing kids from Cork or Galway, a game at 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, you're not going to bring kids because it's too late. So I know they're being probably dictated by the availability of a pitch and availability of when RT can schedule it in as well. But it probably does need to be looked at, because there, even though both games were very good, in particular the Division 1 game, there wasn't much of an atmosphere, and it probably does need to be looked at, really.
I live right beside Croke Park. I live inside the cordon, the match day cordon. So, you know, where the roads are closed, I'm inside that. So, like, I can walk to the Hogan Stand about 2 minutes from my door.
Wow.
And on Saturday and on Sunday, you wouldn't really have known there was a match on, to be honest, around the area. Normally, on any sort of a big day at all, you go up the streets, very busy, up and from Conrad, the shops are thronged, there's people in the pub, you know, you can see it, you can hear it, you can hear the noise. But there wasn't really much. And as we were saying earlier, it's a tricky balance. Like, I think they were expecting about 8,000 in the Croke Park yesterday, and there was no announcement called out for the footballs, no announcement of the crowd, which would suggest maybe they were a little bit disappointed with it. I don't know. But, you know, you could have put that game, those two games in Parnell, and you would have had a great atmosphere. So it's a tricky one to know. Do you want the atmosphere, or do you want the Croke Park occasion? But sometimes the occasion of Croke Park can be drowned out by the emptiness, and it's so hollow, you know, that it's sort of, you know, when you can hear the players, and this happens in men's games as well, when you can hear the players shouting at each other, it's, you know, it's not, I think that's kind of the line in the sand a little bit nearly, that maybe need to look at this again. But yeah, it's an awkward one. Like, it's not straightforward, because as soon as you move the game, don't you know that someone will give out and say, we should be in Croke Park, these games need to be in Croke Park. So it's a very hard one for organisers to get. But Ursula makes a great point in the time. If you're bringing kids and, you know, you want to expose them to the game and maybe get them to buy into it for down the line as they get older and all that, you know, 7 o'clock in the evening or 5:30 in the evening when they have to travel, it's just not feasible.
Yeah, I think we've seen a bit more of the double headers. Do you think that will help as well, Ursula?
Without a doubt. And it's great to see with both some of the Munster championship games for Munster and Leinster for the Camogie and Hurling that they're, you know, there's a little bit of a forward thinking there and realising that the common sense approach there is to have a Camogie game played alongside a men's game, because the more exposure that you get to the Camogie matches, it'll encourage more people to actually watch them rather than just watching a Camogie final on All-Ireland final day. So I think it's a really positive move, and I think more forward thinking like that, because I know in the past I would have heard some players say, oh, it's insulting playing a Camogie match before a hurling game. I don't view it in that way at all. I think it's brilliant. If you're played alongside each other, it's all the better, because I think that's the best way of getting more exposure to the game.
Okay, Ursula and Dunica, thanks for that. Well, that's it from me. You can rate and subscribe to the show. We're on Apple and Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify. Bye for now.